This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app and you'll get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants. 18 plus rewards registration required. Points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome back to the channel and welcome back to another edition of the Spurs Chat podcast. In this edition, we'll be previewing the Tottenham Hotspur v Luton game back in Premier League action on Saturday at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, 3 p.m. kickoff. Mickey van der Ven is expected to be back in the starting 11 and Luton Town have 10 first team players out. Of course, Spurs are in fifth. Luton Town are just above the relegation zone right now in 17th. Now, before I get started and before I introduce our very special guest this evening, I would just like to say a big personal thank you to every single viewer, subscriber and listener to this channel and this podcast. We were the number one football podcast in South Korea, Belgium and Hong Kong in the past week. So thank you so much for all of your incredible support. Now, we do have three very special guests and, of course, returning guests, channel regulars. First up, we've got Becky Day back with us. Becky, how are you?
Hello, Chris. It's nice to do a Thursday, particularly when most of us have got tomorrow off as well with the Easter break. So, yeah, as usual, there's always something to talk about. You know, there's never a day where there's nothing to talk about. So we've, even in the last hour, got things that we can shoehorn into the show. But, yeah, thanks for having me back.
Well, we thought we would just be talking about the Luton game. But as you said, Becky, there is always news. There is always dramas, always something going on concerning Tottenham Hotspur Football Club. We will get into it all. Joining us all the way from Northern Ireland is Gareth McGuinness. Gareth, how are you?
All good, Chris. All good. Looking forward to the show. Looking forward to talking Spurs. And looking forward to the weekend, as Becky says, Easter break. So delighted to be off for a few days and going to enjoy the football after the international break anyway.
And also back with us is Melvin all the way from Malta. Melvin, how are you?
I'm well, Chris. I'm doing well. You know, I'm looking forward to having football again. The international break is a bit boring and can't wait to talk about Spurs again.
Absolutely. Well, glad to have you here, Melvin. Well, in the last hour or so, as Becky said, Tottenham Hotspur Football Club put out the following short announcement. Due to planned industrial action and substantial travel disruption across the rail network, scheduled to take place on Monday the 8th of April, our home Premier League fixture against Nottingham Forest have now been brought forward to Sunday the 7th of April, 6 p.m. kickoff. Of course, the game was meant to take place on Monday the 8th of April. Gareth, I'm going to come straight to you on this because, of course, as I mentioned, you live in Northern Ireland. A lot of planning goes into you coming across for games. You have tickets for this game. You have hotels booked. You have flights booked. What does this mean to you, this change, so late on?
Well, it's really unfortunate, obviously. From a financial point of view, it's going to affect a lot of fans. And a lot to be said, not from a selfish point of view, there's going to be a lot of fans more affected than I am if they're traveling from different parts of Europe. It could be different parts of the world, Asia, America. You just don't know who could be going to a game. The Premier League's so popular worldwide. But obviously, just found out there about an hour ago, had flights booked, hotel booked for the Monday night. And now you've had a, funny enough, it's actually cost, it would cost you more money to change a flight or get a, or to try and change hotel dates. So I've just had it booked the Sunday. So an extra flight on the Sunday, extra night hotel, and come back on the original flight on the Tuesday home. So I think about a net fee of £120, which as quite a lot of money. But I mean, I'm sure there's going to be a lot more worse affected than me. But it's inconvenient, Chris, because you put all this planning on the games, and with 10 days notice, you get told that the game's getting moved. I mean, it was originally scheduled. I know every game's scheduled for a Saturday at 3 o'clock until the TV picks come out. So it went from a Saturday at 3 o'clock, then Monday night at 8 o'clock, and now it's moved to a Sunday at six o'clock. So it's had three different dates. So it's very unfortunate. And I mean, you know more than anyone, I had a moan last week about the Arsenal game. I'm probably more upset about the Arsenal game because I do think that's something that could be looked at. This one is out of the Premier League's hands, as out of the Tottenham's hands. It is just unfortunate. There's industrial action. But I think there's a lot of improvement that could be done in terms of kickoff times. Premier League could be working with UEFA. And I know the police get involved on fixtures and there's kickoff times get moved. But I just think the whole process this year has been pretty poor. And it seems like we're getting notice for games 4 weeks in advance when we're always given 6 to 7 weeks notice. So I'm hoping when the independent regulator comes in, this is something that's looked at, because it's not just Spurs fans, it's fans across the board. If you look at the FSA on Twitter, they're constantly having a go with the Premier League. Tottenham Hotspur Supporters Trust have had their say, as have ours. So it's definitely something that needs improved going on. I know fans in London have it a bit easier, like they can accommodate for games, but Premier League's worldwide, Chris. And if you go to a game, there's loads of different cultures and loads of different people at a game from all over the world, and they're spending a hell of a lot of money. Yeah, and at the end of the day, they should be thought about too. So I don't want to rant on about it because I want to be positive, because I've enjoyed the season, but it is something that definitely needs addressing moving forward.
Gareth, you've also got issues for the Arsenal game, haven't you? Because you've got flights and hotels booked, and we still don't know whether it's going to be on the Sunday or the Saturday.
This is the issue. So I've decided to swap for the Nottingham Forest game, and I've had issues with this one. So
yeah,
it's about all over the show. But I mean, you only look at Melvin from Malta. You know, he was speaking, maybe his dad was looking at one of them games. So I'm still lucky that I'm in Ireland and it's an easier fix than ours. But I mean, if you're an Asian fan, and we know how many Asian fans go to the game and how much they love it, I don't know how they would be able to sort that now, because it's quite a lot of money to get over for a Monday game. So I'm not sure how they would go about getting their ticket for a Sunday. So I can only imagine that a lot of fans will lose the money they've paid on travel expenses, hotels, flights, and they'll just have to sell their tickets on. I would imagine that the ticket exchange will be rammed now with a lot of fans that maybe can't go to the game because it's just too much money to change their plans. So from as much as I'm annoyed about it, I'm very fortunate that I'm in a position that I'm not too far away from England. They change it and it's not going to cost me an arm and a leg, but it's definitely something that we need addressing moving forward, Chris, because it seems like every week now it's not just us. I remember there was a Burnley Luton game changed in January due to a team being involved in an FA Cup replay, and their game was changed from a Friday to a Monday for 9 nights, from 9 days notice. So again, it's happening not just with Spurs, across the board. It definitely needs, I'm sure when the independent regulator comes in, a lot of these games will be given, you'll be getting more notice, because from what I understand, this is obviously a different situation with the industrial strike, but the reason that a lot of these games are held back and it's last-minute selections is the TV want the best games on, especially this time of the year. They want to wait to see. And unfortunately, they are controlling the Premier League because they're the ones pumping all the money in. They're the broadcasters paying out all this extra money to get to secure their deals. Sky, for example, have done the biggest record deal for the next 5 years. And that is why there's so much money in the Premier League, is because of the likes of Sky. You look at the other leagues around the world, they're not as well off as the Premier League teams. So it's a catch-22 for the Premier League, but it's definitely something that the independent regulator will be looking at when it comes on.
Darren writes here, I'm a season ticket holder who travels from Newark in Nottingham to every home game. Of course, Becky, we know that you live in Chester and you come down every single home game to watch Tottenham. How has this news in the last hour or so affected you?
Well, it's like Gareth just said then, we wait until the TV picks are made and then we arrange travel if necessary. So, you know, those of you that know me, I take Jack, and Jack has other things. You know, he's a very sporty kid. He plays basketball, he plays football. And I kind of sort of say to him, you know, do you want to come to this game? Do you want to go to that game? And then the game gets changed and it's like, oh, you can come on the Sunday now. Like, for example, his basketball match has been cancelled, so he's come to Luton. He wasn't coming to Luton. Anyway, so we waited for the TV to be picked up. We finished for Easter today, so we've got 2 weeks off. And that Monday is like in the middle for us. So we're like, right, we'll book the hotel, will stay over on the Monday night, go down Monday morning. You know, last time we did it, I think, for the Fulham game at half term, we met some friends in Paddington. So we would do that and then stay over. And then I literally was doing some schoolwork just before I came on here, and I had a friend messaging me going, have you seen the change to the Forest game? So I quickly scanned it and was like, okay. But literally while you were just talking then, I've managed to rebook the hotel for the Friday. I'll probably lose the money on the hotel, but on the Monday, you know, weirdly, Sunday nights are a good price. Saturday nights are always the worst. So Sunday nights are not too bad. So I've just booked that. So at least I feel that we're still able to go. But like, I agree with Gareth, you know, I've got friends coming over to Ireland for Luton game and they've got flights, and those people that travel much further. And it's just annoying that you wait for the TV picks and then you do it. And I completely agree with what you said about the Arsenal fixture. And I know my husband's a Liverpool supporter, and that same weekend they're being affected. They're one of those asterisk matches that says this could change and it could change there if this happens with the Champions League and da-da. Just move it for once. So move the Arsenal game to 12:30 on the Saturday. Why say it could possibly be on the Sunday? Because again, everyone's in limbo. Nobody can decide what to do. And I said off air before that, you know, I know it's industrial action, and they want to cause issues with it and make things difficult, but it's the first time I can remember a match of this magnitude kind of be moving for industrial action. But it's just annoying, and there will be people that won't be able to go, and equally there will be people that will be able to go, and usually if someone can't go, someone else can. It's just, you, in terms of hotels and flights and things, like Gareth just said, sometimes it's more expensive to change it and cancel it. And it's like the match going fan seems to be way down the pecking order. That's the problem. You know, I could just say, oh, stuff it, we'll watch it at home. And we want to be there. It was a game we were looking forward to. And that's the thing that's tricky, is that you just want to, you know, I said off air, I think I'm quite a positive supporter, but it does kind of, you've got the issue with these senior set concessions of the season tickets. And there's these certain things that you just keep being kind of tested, and you're thinking, it's almost like we have just become a CRN number, and it's not, we don't want to be, we want to be there, we want to support the team. And yeah, 6:00 on a Sunday is a funny old fixture, but you know, unfortunately it is what it is. And I'm just fortunate that I can shove things around, but I know some people won't be able to.
Melvin, welcome to the show. How are you feeling about this fixture change so late on?
Well, it's a shame, but it's another football game. But you don't know whose lives it will affect. For example, my uncle is booked to go to this game, and I don't know what travel arrangements he had already planned, and if he needs to shift things, I'll probably speak to him soon, because I just heard the news literally about 30 minutes before I came on here. So you never know. You know, these things are, it's a shame. You never know. You know, it's a 60,000-seater stadium. You have season ticket holders that don't miss a game and live in London. You have people from the UK. You probably have some kids. Maybe it's their first ever, you know, time watching Spurs. And I remember my first game and thinking, what if that was postponed? You know, you have to think about these things, because you probably have a fan that waited very, very long time to watch a Spurs game, and his dad says, yeah, look, Nottingham Forest is available, let's go to that one. And then that happens, and it's a big, big shame. And hopefully it doesn't affect many, many Spurs fans, but I'm sure it will. But it's a shame, and these things, you know, you cannot control them. It's unlucky, and I don't know, it's just a shame.
I blame Nuno Espirito Santo. Of course, it's No, all joking aside, Melvin, let's come to you. How are you feeling as a Spurs fan right now? Because, of course, last time out, we lost 3-0 at Craven Cottage against Fulham. I don't think a lot of people expected that performance and that result. How have you been as a Spurs fan since that? Because, of course, we've been on international duty. Of course, we returned to Premier League action on Saturday. Of course, we'll get into the Luton preview. But how are you feeling as a Spurs fan right now?
I'm still happy and optimistic. I'm delighted with the progress we've made. I think we're learning about the squad. We're learning about Postecoglou. Even Postecoglou, I think, is learning about the players, you know, what he can get out of them. They're still young. They're still learning certain things and adapting to the Premier League. I think it's still a young squad. I mean, the average age is quite young. But these things happen in football, and they'll certainly learn from it. I mean, you can't go in the Premier League and expect you're just going to win just because you had a decent result the week before. And overall, I'm happy with the season. And so, you know, you're frustrated from one game to another sometimes when it doesn't go your way, but that's part of football. And I'm here for this part of it, because the team will adapt and they will learn, and it's the experience that these young players need. They need to be sometimes yelled at for mistakes. Why didn't you do this? Why didn't you turn up? They have to analyze why the performance didn't go our way. What did we do tactically? What did we do wrong? If it was something we could have changed. It's these things. I'm happy that they're happening this season, because there's a lot of hope and exciting possibilities for next season. So in a way, I don't mind it if they happen this season, because you think of other teams that went through the same process. They struggle the first season and they drop silly points, but then they learn from it and they grow, and you identify these things in a season where most Spurs fans wrote it off. You know, a lot of Spurs fans said, we won't finish sixth, we won't finish seventh. You know, some pundits said we're in a relegation battle. And so when these things happen, yes, it's disappointing, but in a way...
Melvin, can I ask, though, were you surprised by that level of performance against Fulham? Because I get all of the positivity. I feel very positive about Spurs this season, but are you surprised that the team gave that performance, losing by that margin, and let's face it and be frank and honest, it could have been more at Craven Cottage. And when you think back to the start of the season, particularly during pre-season, Ange was constantly shouting forward, pass the ball forward. We were moving the ball so fluidly and, you know, really fast. And it was all forward thinking football. We're not really seeing that. We're not really seeing that now. Why not?
Yeah, honestly, I was disappointed. Obviously, I want Spurs to win every single game, and you just think, why did we perform to that level? You know, we can do better. You just know, and you have to analyze and think: is it injuries? Was it maybe the players? You just don't know. It's something that the club has to look at, and Postecoglou has to look at. Just from the outside, I would have thought that we would have won that game. When you saw the performance we did against Villa, and we, you know, one of the best performances of the season probably, and I was so happy and delighted, because it was a game that we had to win to keep us into the race for top four, which is not a prize, we kept being told. So when that happened against Fulham, who are a very good side and they're a very good coach, so. But to lose that way, to lose 3-0 and not score, you just think, this season we've lost games, but we haven't lost them. You know, like Kulusevski said, if we lose, we lose our way. And we didn't lose our way. It felt that there was something missing. And it felt that hopefully with the Luton game, we bounce back and we forget about Fulham and like it never happened. And hopefully the game after we win again and we just forget about Fulham. But it raises questions about the squad and the team, because mistakes like that, we have to learn from them. And the players, especially the young players that played, they have to learn from them and not make the same mistake. Otherwise, it's pointless. Otherwise, we keep doing the same things over and over. And if we don't learn from these things, we have to learn and we have to grow as a team.
Gareth, let's come to you on that point, because Melvin's pretty much said what Ange said as well, that the players could learn from this defeat and that performance at Craven Cottage. Now, when you look at the top of the Premier League table now, Spurs are currently fifth. We've got 53 points from 28 games. So we could move back into the top four with a win at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium against Luton on Saturday. Of course, Villa play Wolves later on that evening, 5:30 p.m. kickoff at Villa Park. Gareth, how confident are you that Spurs are going to be playing in the Champions League next season? And were you shocked by that level of performance against Fulham?
I'll answer the final part of that question first, Chris. I mean, surprised and when it happened, in terms of after beating Villa 4-0 and, you know, such a good one, you think confidence would be high. It was a chance with Man United not playing and Villa weren't playing the next day to get into the top four. You thought maybe, I mean, what an opportunity. But from the get-go, we weren't really on it. I think Fulham played very well. I think that commanded it. It kind of reminded me of the Brighton game around Christmas time where that never got going. I know we got going towards the end of that game and got two goals and possibly could have got one or two more, which would have been Brighton dominated the game for 80 minutes. And this was quite similar, if you remember, for how bad we were. We had some great chances in that Fulham game towards the end. They at least get a couple of goals. But on the whole, it wasn't good enough. The midfield battle, we were totally outplayed, totally overrun. Defence, you could see with Van de Ven not being there, it was a loss. I mean, it's not an excuse, Hum. You should still be better. But Dragosin come in, hey, we've seen it with Pedro Porro. It's a tough to come in the Premier League, especially a defender, middle of the season, a big game, and it can be a big culture shock, and it looked that for him. And Fulham were a team in good form, so very surprised at the timing of it, but not surprised that that performance and that result happened, because there is going to be bumps. This is, I don't like saying it because of, you know, process, but there is going to be bumps, and it's about how you react to them. If you think back to that Brighton game, we lost to Brighton and then we went on a good run after that, so you can only hope that they'll do the same. It is a learning curve. I think at the minute we've got, and whilst I thought this would be a positive, Chris, I think that a lot of these postponements, like we've had a lot of free weekends, there's been international breaks, a winter break. I just don't think we've been able to get any rhythm. I think a lot of the time we're hanging around for a game. I know the Fulham game was 6 days after, but I just,
Gareth,
think it's going to stop start of season.
I get that, but the other argument could be that, you know, like Melvin mentioned, the Aston Villa game, probably one of the best performances of the season. A week later, you go to Fulham and you play like that. What? Why? That's not because you're waiting around for a game.
Yeah, no, there's a whole host of reasons why I think there's been issues in the second half of the season, because a lot of the players have come back, but I don't think a lot of them are match fit. Madison, for me, doesn't look 100% fit. I think that's why he only played 15 minutes for England. Otherwise, he would have been playing a lot more. I think he hasn't looked. Sarr's been a bit off it. Some games he's been good, other games not so good. Basuma hasn't really got that early season form back. Bentancur has struggled in games, and I think he's seen maybe someone like Højbjerg when he come on, and I know the game is over, but he did give us a bit of control on midfield. I'm not his biggest fan, but I think Ange has got some big decisions to make this weekend of who he goes with. I think that midfield, the minute, he can't, I'm not sure, I think we know his favourite midfield is Basuma, Sarr and Madison, but at the minute that's just not working. He's tried Bentancur in there, that's not really worked. So it's difficult at the minute. They put your finger on why we're being so inconsistent from game to game. I think a lot of the games we've won, Chris, I think one half we've been poor and the next second half we've been very good, or, you know, whereas the start of the season I think it was all the way around. It is a process. I think unfortunately a lot of fans are holding us to the standards we set in them first 10 games, but for me that was never going to be reality. I think we surprised a lot of teams have now worked this out a bit, so, and the injuries have played a part. So look, where we are at the minute, Chris, is probably where we are, you know, fighting for that fourth and fifth spot. You're asking me about top four or Champions League football. Look, I think if it's five places we're there, I don't see us falling out of the fifth. I don't see us finishing sixth or below. I think if it goes to that fourth spot, it's going to be tight. You would think it would favour us with Villa being in Europe and us having less games. But I just think at times this season, we look like we need more games because I think there's been a lot of stoppages. And I just think you can train all you want to have practice games, but there's nothing like the Premier League game on a Saturday. Nothing can prepare you for that. So, look, I'm sure next season when we've got injuries and there's games, like we've seen teams play 4 games in 10 days, 11 days, and we'll be complaining about it next year. But I just think there's been a lot of things that went against us in terms of Chelsea making a cup final, Man City now in a semi-final, and we're going to have to squeeze games in at the end of the season, which probably won't help either. So, look, I'm still very, fairly positive. I think that the signs are there that we're going in the right direction. I think the players are enjoying it. And I mean, me and you probably didn't agree on this, but I really thought after the game on the Fulham game that Sonny was speaking on behalf of the lads, and I thought he was really, really hurting. I've seen a lot of people do interviews before, and it felt a little bit different this time. It felt like it was hurting him a lot, the result and the performance at Fulham. So I'm expecting us to bounce back. It's going to be a difficult week. We've got 3 games, no excuses. We can find a rhythm. I'm expecting us to get at least 2 wins in the next 3 and at least have a draw in the other one. But, Chris, I've worked out in my head that we're going to finish on 73 points. And if we get these 73 points, our goal difference is a lot better than Man United. That would mean they'd have to win 9 out of their 10 games. They finish on 74. So I think if it goes to the 5th spot, we will be fine. We only need probably 6 wins out of them last 10 games. So if it goes to 1 spot, Chris, that's where it's going to get tricky, because we are probably going to have to win 7, maybe 8 of them games to make sure we're the team that finishes 4th. So lots to play for, but I'm fairly positive, and I think we will get to that 4th spot. I've said that from kind of all season, and even when we've been on a bad run or in Christmas time and people were questioning, I still says we'll finish 4th. So I think we are the 4th best team in the league at the moment, and I'm hopefully at the end of the season that shows.
Well, of course, 10 games to go in this Premier League season. And I don't think anyone would ever disagree with you, Gareth, that Heung-min Son was hurting after that defeat, particularly how we played. And I thought that he dealt with that interview extremely well. Becky, I'm not going to ask you about the Fulham game because I think that you've spoken about it enough. You, Craig, Jamie and Ricky spoke for almost 2 hours after that Fulham game. So thank you so much for your input. What I did want to ask you, Becky, about that particular performance and result. Do you think it's going to turn into a positive that Postecoglou can now say, we don't ever want to be doing that again, and somehow it can be a positive moving forward?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Gareth was just talking then. I was trying to think of games where we'd bounce back. Like he talked then about Brighton. I remember the game after West Ham. Didn't we have Newcastle and that up to the point, maybe at Villa, the Newcastle game at that point was probably the best game we'd had. Or as I said, like Gareth said, half of a game. I think I agree with a lot of what you said there. I think sometimes when there is a bit of a gap, it is almost kind of, you know, you just want to get on with it. I say all the time when we've got lots of fixtures, if you have a bad result, you can quickly turn it around. And I do think sometimes we kind of linger on results. But yeah, I'm hoping for a reaction. You know, Luton, I've written down in my kind of like bits of notes for today's game is that they always score, but they always concede. And, you know, thinking back to games where they've scored 89, 90 minute equalizers and they were 2-0 up against 2-0 down against Villa and came back and they were 3-0 up, weren't they, against Bournemouth and lost 3-4. They're always entertaining games, Luton. But I think we've got to, if we're talking about Europe, whether it be 5th Champions League or 5th Europa League, surely we've got a squad, even with injuries and international break and travelling and jet lag and all that. Surely we've got a team good enough to beat Luton. And that's no disrespect to Luton. I think if we're worrying about Luton at home at 3 o'clock kickoff on a Saturday, then we probably don't deserve to be in Europe. And I think I heard a few people saying a similar thing when we played Palace. The disappointing thing for me is that we need to start games better. You know, even at Palace, they scored first. And I think there's some weird stat, isn't there, about how we haven't scored a goal in the first half for getting on 10 games. So we've just got to start better. If we start better, the atmosphere is better. The whole kind of feeling around the ground is better. It just kind of the players feed off that. You know, there is going to be some kind of tiredness with them all traveling all different parts of the world and different, like you said, different sort of lengths of time they've been playing. What I thought was really great about watching the short bit that Maddison played is he looked like that was the Maddison we had at the beginning of the season. They were some of the cutbacks we saw against Arsenal. And I remember the Luton goal and that kind of almost running the byline and pulling it back in for whoever's there to score with. If we have that sort of thing first thing, you know, early first half, it could be a cricket score. But yeah, surely we've got enough to beat Luton. I would hope that we do.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Picture the scene. All of your mates around, you've got your McNugget share boxes ready to go. Partner this with your team playing champagne football. Perfect. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. There's nothing quite like a McDelivery. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Well, Becky, their last six Premier League games, they have drawn two and they have lost four. They have got 10 first team players out of this trip to Tottenham on Saturday. Of course, we know that Ross Barkley has been their standout player this season. And of course, they've got former Tottenham Hotspur player Andros Townsend. He was a sub in the last game for them. Let's hear from Rob Edwards now, the Luton manager, because he said that we're not going to change anything in this game. And in the next four Premier League games for them, they play Spurs, Arsenal and Manchester City. He first talks about Mickey van der Ven. Of course, Mickey van der Ven, as I mentioned earlier, is expected to come back in this game.
He's when you watch him, and you know, we've been able to watch a lot of Tottenham because of the length of time that we had to prepare. I mean, he's an incredible athlete and he's been a brilliant player this season for them. You're right, they've got a really unique way of playing. It's really difficult to play against as well. So, you're right, fast, really bright and sharp, and you can sort of, you know, where everyone's going to be or go. There is people that will rotate, and James Maddison obviously be, you know, one of those players that could pop up almost anywhere. But stopping it is difficult, and that's obviously credit to them, credit to their talent, and just the real brightness of really top international footballers. So we're looking for, I mean, this, yeah, it's just, yeah, the next few games are going to be as hard as you get in the league and in world football, you know, so let's have a right good go at it. We're ready for it, you know, we'll give it a good go, we're going to step forward. The last 15 games, there's only four teams that have scored more goals than Luton Town in the Premier League. You know, that's a good chunk of the league. We're at our best when we're on the front foot and when we attack. And I know that's, can at times leave us a little bit exposed, but if we're going to try and win games, we've got to try and score. And so we're not going to change. We're going to keep working to get better and work hard on trying to get the balance of keeping the back door shut as well, which is really difficult at this level. And I think most teams are struggling to keep clean sheets in this league. Goals for fun, isn't there, everywhere? But we're going to keep attacking and trying to win games. I don't care where we're going. We're going to Tottenham, we're going to Arsenal, we're going to City in the next four games. We're going to go and try and win those games. I know that sounds silly, but that's what we're going to do.
Melvin, let's come to you. What have you made of Luton Town so far this season? Because, of course, they are sitting just above the relegation zone because, of course, Nottingham Forest have just had points deducted. But what have you made of them? Because he talks there about them being such an attacking team. Spurs are such an attacking team. There should be a hatful of goals on Saturday. But of course, when you think about that game earlier on in the season, it was only 1-0 with a Mickey van der Ven goal.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting game. You know, both teams play really good football, obviously. And I've not watched much of Luton, but I've been keeping an eye on Ross Barkley, who came out of nowhere and has been impressing this season. I mean, obviously, he had a very, very bad time at Chelsea, but it just goes to show when you've been given a chance to play and when you play consistently and you have a good pre-season and your quality starts to show. And Ross Barkley is, you know, showing his experience and he's a very, very good player. And I wouldn't even mind having him as spares next season. But yeah, it's going to be a tough battle in midfield. And I feel that if we get the midfield right, because it seems to be our weakness this season, the midfield. It's going to be a battle, and Ross Barkley certainly knows how to play. You know, not a Premier League game, but it seems to our midfield's been struggling this season. We're not being very consistent, and it just seems to be if we get that aspect of the match right, if our midfield three are on it and are energetic from minute one, and we push and we press like we do earlier in the season, it seems. And if we score an early goal as well, it just the game will be much calmer. I think it'll get the fans going as well, because we've been waiting for 2 weeks after a defeat like that. I think the atmosphere is going to take a little bit of a push, you know, an early goal or something like that. Because I was thinking, like, how do we motivate ourselves? You know, it's Luton. It's a game. We have to win. It's a must win. And everybody's expecting us to win. And if it's 30, 40 minutes, 45 minutes, and we haven't scored yet, the atmosphere is going to be terrible. And if we concede the first goal, it's going to be even worse. It's going to be one of those games where we have to score early. And we have to, you know, really, really come out, you know, pressing like we did earlier in the season. And it's going to be interesting, you know, squad selection, what the selection is going to be. But Luton obviously are going to try to come and frustrate us, and they'll have a game plan and they'll stick to it, and they'll try their best to get something out of the game for sure. Probably a point for them will be enough, but I don't think they'll come to us with the mentality of trying to get all 3 points. Obviously, that has to be our mentality. So it's a tricky game, because every single game in the Premier League is tricky. You can't go into these things thinking you're going to win just because it's Luton. You know, they have experienced players. It's going to be interesting to see Andros Townsend play against us again. And with our luck, he'll probably score. You know, it's one of those things. One of how many times do ex Bears players end up scoring against us, even if we're leading, you know, by 2 or 3 goals? I still have a feeling he'll probably end up scoring one of them. But it's football, and we've seen many of these things happen.
Gareth, let's come to you. Melvin talks about team selection there, and talks about the midfield, and I'm you know, it was definitely a topic for everyone, every Spurs fan after that Fulham game. Now, this was the team that Ange put out against Fulham at Craven Cottage. Vicario in goal, and then Poro, Romero, Dragushin, Udogi, Basuma, Saar, Kulusevski, Madison, Johnson and Son. Now, of course, Ange used all 5 subs in that game. Bentancur, Højbjerg and Werner all coming on in the 66th minute. Richarlison coming on 10 minutes from time. Lo Celso coming on 3 minutes from the end of the game. It's very difficult this season, isn't it? You know, particularly in the last couple of months, to try and predict the starting 11 under Postecoglou. What do you think he's going to go with in this Luton game on Saturday?
It's got a lot of tough decisions they make, because it's, does he stick with a sort of tried and trusted? And let them away with the Fulham game and say, look, that was a one-off or whatever, and stick. But I've got a feeling he's going to twist and change it up quite dramatically. I think the back four will be the same, only Van de Ven will come on for Dragusin if he's fit. Well, we're hearing he's back in training, but he may not be rust, but I have a feeling he'll bring him on. So I think Van de Ven comes on at the back. Personally, this is what I would do. I just think we need to try something a bit different. I would like to see Højbjerg come on and then let him sit in front of the back four, because I think we're getting overrun. We're committing a lot of players forward, which I love, but I think we're getting exposed. And as much as Luton are saying they're going to play attacking football, they will know the teams that have had success against Spurs this season have been teams that have had us in the break and played on behind us. I can't see Luton coming at us. So I think they're going to wait for their opportunities and try and hit us in the break. So I'd like to see Højbjerg come on. And I'd really like to let the shackles off in. And I would bring Lo Celso on. I think if he, based on his early season form, he's had injuries. But I think when he's been fit this year, he's been good. And I would play him and Madison, almost like 2 attacking eights. And let Højbjerg kind of sit on behind them and just don't cross in front of the ball. Just you stay in there, watch the game, and snuff out any danger on behind. Because I think Bissouma recently is just too many mistakes, sloppy. And the abilities there with Bissouma, I just think he's far too casual at times. And it's almost like a bit of a stroll. So I find Højbjerg coming on. I like his comments during the week. He's not down tools this year when he's played. He's come on and he's not played a lot of football, but he's come on and made an impact, especially as a sub. So I think it's time we give him an opportunity. And I would play him, and I would like Lo Celso and Madison. They sort of play as two attacking eights. And then if Richarlison was fit, now we're here and he won't be, I would have played him up front as a striker. So I would go with Johnson on the right, Werner on the left, and Son through the middle. I would give Kulusevski a break. I think too many performances recently, just too predictable, slowing us down. And I think we could do a piss and getting the ball into the box and the Son making them runs. So I think at times, as talented as Kulusevski is, and I do like him, I think we need to try something different as well. So I go with Johnson back on the right. I think Johnson's better off the right. I think he's more comfortable on the right. Werner on the left, and Son through the middle. Now, I know that's probably not the team that's going to be picked, but I would just like to see do something different. I think Luton, like Becky says, I'm pretty confident whatever team we put out will probably win. But I think we could really do be putting 4 or 5 goals past the team at home, get the fans, especially an early goal. You know, too many games this year, we've been sitting at half-time 1-0 down or 0-0. Yes, we've had a lot of the ball. We've had a lot of possession, but not created enough. So I think we're going to dominate this Luton team possession-wise, but it's where we can convert it, create enough chances and score enough goals. So I'd like us just let the shackles go off. And, you know, if we play that team, I'm not saying that's, I mean, we could beat Luton 6-0. And I would still, if that was a team that played, I would still make changes for West Ham, because West Ham's obviously a different type of game. You'd be a bit more cautious, a bit more physical on there. You'd probably bring the likes of Sarr back in for a game like that. But I just like us to do that, Chris. So, I mean, you've got plenty of creativity with Madison and Lo Celso. And I think another thing that's happening as well, when Madison's been playing recently, teams are sort of marking him out of the game, and we've got no one else in midfield that can sort of create an opening. And Lo Celso's like that. So, I definitely think it would help Madison if he came onto a team, and Højbjerg gives you that bit more protection and a bit more safe as well in possession. I think sometimes Bissouma can be a bit loose. So, be interesting to see some difficult decisions they make. I mean, I don't think anyone will be able to predict the team for Saturday, because I do think he will make some changes.
Becky, what do you think Postecoglou will do? Because, of course, Richarlison's now back. Will Sonny carry on playing through the middle? And, of course, Timo Werner, since coming in from in January, he's used to starting games. Bentancur, when fit and available, he's used to starting games. What do you think Postecoglou will do on Saturday?
Yeah, I think it's very difficult. Like I said, I think sometimes it's into consideration how long they've travelled and when they get back to training and things like that as well. It's really tricky, because just reading the comments here as well, people are saying about, you know, when we struggled against Sheffield United, and we did struggle against Luton in the home game. I know we had 10 men for a whole half, but it wasn't as easy and free-flowing as maybe we expected. And I think I agree with what's been said so far, is that maybe we disrespected Fulham a little bit, and we did feel we just turned up and we would get a result. So there needs to be a kind of an attitude change. I don't know. I think he likes Kulusevski, and I think after Kulusevski coming out with that letter to the fans saying about, you know, the things that he says, and he talked about speaking about Ange, didn't he, this week, when he was captain for Sweden. So I can see him starting Kulusevski and Johnson coming on and being a kind of impact player like that. I think Richarlison possibly won't make it. He may make the bench. So I think Sonny probably will still be through the middle. But in terms of the midfield, it's really interesting hearing that about Højbjerg, because I think we're right. You know, even when Madison and Bentancur have played together, it's not quite worked. I know he's saying himself, he's getting himself back to fitness. And then this week we hear that he's got a broken toe as well. But I do really, it hasn't quite worked. And reading the comments, people saying about Bissouma being slightly off the pace, and maybe Højbjerg is an option to have then two players moving further forward. But who those players are, you know, it may be still Sarr. I think if Van de Ven, it's a tricky one for Van de Ven as well, because just again, reading the comments there about how much he's trained this week, would they play him for the whole game, or would they look to Wednesday? Because as you said, Tuesday is a completely different game against West Ham, isn't it? I think he's kind of got to try to think that and look to that as well. You know, Dragušin played really well at Villa, and I said on the show that he was there on the pitch for all 4 goals, but then, you know, he obviously played for the Fulham game where we conceded so many. So it's a tricky one, really. I just think the international break is such a pest anyway, when, you know, a lot of them are friendlies, and you know, apart from really the Wales game, I had no interest in any of the games in the international break. And that was only because the Wales game had something riding on it. You know, the players have come back today, maybe yesterday. So how much is Ange going to be able to change, if he is going to change multiple personnel? So maybe for that reason, he does keep it with the same team that started against Fulham. But there needs to be a reaction, whoever does play.
Mickey, do you think that Postecoglou will possibly go with Van de Ven for one of the games, Dragushin for one of the games? And also this week, Dragushin's agent has been talking yet again and said that he's putting in 3 hours extra every single day, 2 in the gym, 1 on the pitch. Is that a good thing? Because even his agent come out and said it's like him doing 2 full-time jobs.
Yeah, I heard him saying that. It's like he's got a job, a real job. But it reminded me of when Kane, when they say about Kane used to be the last one off the training pitch. And I remember when Porro was saying that he was really trying to kind of train last year to kind of beef up because of the difference in the pace in the Premier League. And I know Hill is always in the gym, isn't he, trying to kind of beef up as well. So I don't necessarily see it as a bad thing, as long as it doesn't bring on injuries. But yeah, I certainly think when Romero's fit, Romero is the constant, and then Dragushin and Van de Ven will be switched in when they're both fit. It's just deciding which one for which, really. Would Van de Ven be better with maybe the kind of more toxic atmosphere on Tuesday? And that's because, you know, Dragushin is still so new to the Premier League. I know Mickey is as well, but it feels like he's been here so long already. He's got a little bit more international experience as well. So, yeah, it's a tricky one. But it's a great problem to have. You know, we have got a little bit more strength in depth now at last.
Dragushin's agent loves an interview, doesn't he? He loves talking to the media.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's a lot more to come as well. Melvin, let's come to you. I just wanted to ask you the question. Do you think that Richarlison will come back into the starting 11 on Saturday? And if so, will Son then go back out to the left? A little bit of a player focus here on Richarlison. So far this season in the Premier League, 62% shot accuracy, 10 goals in 23 matches, 3 assists. He started, shots 58, 10 goals, and the XG 8.8. What have you made of Richarlison so far this season? Because interestingly, in the last week or so, when I went to the Legends Nights, Aurelio Gomez and Sandro both said expect more from Richarlison. There is a lot more to come from him. Of course, he has had links away to Saudi, but he's done well at Spurs this season so far. He's spoken about, you know, a lot of personal struggles. He's spoken out about mental health again this week. But what have you made of Richarlison on the pitch, Melvin, this season?
Yeah, I mean, in the period that where Son was away, he stepped up with the goals, and he's been playing well, and we've missed him in the last couple of games. I mean, definitely for Fulham, we missed him. We missed, you know, his aerial threat, his pressing. He wins the ball, he works hard, and he's been scoring goals as well, which is at the end of the day, it's his job as well. So I'm a fan of Richarlison, and I would be happy if we kept him for next season. And obviously he's been linked away, and some fans would say cash in and buy someone else. But I think the exact opposite. I think a player grows from season to another. You know, he's still fairly young, and he's developing into a very, very useful player. Even if next season we have, you know, Champions League, we're going to have more games to play. Hopefully we're not out of the cups, you know, within the first round or the second round, and there's going to be opportunity to play. So that's what I think Postecoglou wants. He wants players he could rely on, and he's very good coming off the bench. I think he's finding his feet at the club, and it takes time for that to happen. You know, just takes time to settle. We're a different club than Everton, and he's had his struggles, you know, on and off the pitch. He's had injuries. He had an operation, and this season he looked better. I mean, last season when you saw him on the pitch, you felt something wasn't right. You felt that this player, something is wrong, and you could see it. When he was subbed off, he was disappointed when he didn't score. It was like the end of the world. And I was thinking, like, what is going on? Something is wrong. And now, you know, you hear about the issues he was going through, his struggles, and you start to think, oh, it makes a little bit more sense now because he was going through all of that and it was difficult for him to perform, you know. So I'm happy to have Richarlison in the squad. I'm a huge fan of his, like I've said in previous podcasts. And I think he's a good striker and I think he's still developing, finding his feet. And in the Postecoglou system with, you know, when we're playing at our best, I think he's really effective. I just think when we press and we have that energy and I just think he makes us better in a way. And I think we've missed him in these last couple of games where he hasn't played. And that run when Son was away and he scored, I think, 7 goals in a row or something like that. I think we need to go back and in a way analyze and see what we did there, because what we did there, we need to go back to it because it was working. And we need to obviously find a way to get him fit again and playing. I heard online on Twitter, I don't know if it's been confirmed, but he might be injured again. Something about his knee. I don't know if that was old news or new news, but we'll see tomorrow during the press conference. But hopefully he's fine and he plays, because honestly, that was the first thing I was thinking. I really hope, you know, Richarlison starts and Son goes on his left, because I'm more of a fan of Son being played on the left than being played through the middle. I just think Richarlison's hold-up play, we benefit so much from it, because he presses and gets us, you know, up the pitch quicker. And with Werner and Johnson, I don't think we've played a match yet with, you know, Richarlison, Werner and Johnson yet. I know it's impossible to drop Heung-min Son. And I love Heung-min Son. He's probably one of the best players we've had in a long time. And the boy is quality. He's world class. And it'll be a sad, sad day when he doesn't start. But it also excites me to see if we can play them three together, because you think the speed of Werner and Johnson with Richarlison's hold-up play just offers something different. Something that, you know, when you're losing a game or you're struggling to score, it's just something different. And I think, like Garrett said, the opposition sometimes figure us out and they know what we're going to do, because Postecoglou is quite, not repetitive, but he's quite consistent with his choices. He's quite consistent and we might...
He chooses the best team to win the game, Melvin. And I've got to say, I completely disagree with you. To have Son out of that team and to have the other three in the starting 11, I think would be a huge mistake.
No, I'm not saying we don't start Son, but anything. But, I mean, this is the season to try things out as well. I mean, hopefully, if we're winning a game, and you just try that those front three, it's something that I'm sure Postecoglou will try. And you never know; you could try it versus Luton if we're winning, and because Son needs a rest as well. I mean, you don't want Son being injured at the later stage of the season. But
yeah,
it's just.
Gareth, let's come to you. I just want to stay on the topic of Richarlison, because, of course, you are a UEFA licensed coach. I just wanted to ask your opinion. He's come out and said that he's had dark thoughts and he even considered quitting football. Are you surprised that football clubs and, of course, the Premier League, or do you think that they should be helping players a lot more than they do?
I think it's been brought more to the attention now over the last couple of years. We've seen all our players, especially when they retire, players have bad injuries. They speak about mental health problems. There's obviously a lot happening in football at the minute around footballers gambling and stuff. And we've seen it in the past with alcohol and stuff. So there's a number of issues. On this case with Richarlison, it just seems that he's made the move to Spurs. He was so happy, and he ran into a manager he didn't get on with. I think he was playing out in the right-hand side. It didn't really suit him. He's gone on to say that he had that dressing room row with Conte. And I think with injuries, he was having that problem with his hip. So, I mean, I think there's a whole host of things that added the Richarlison, you know, having these mental health issues. And as you say about quitting, he also went further and says that he considered as well his own life at times. So quite disturbing thoughts. But yeah. I think this isn't the first time we've heard this. I think quite recently there's been a number of issues at clubs. So from my knowledge, I do understand there is a lot more happening behind the scenes at clubs across all levels, especially at the professional level. The gate counselling. I think if you remember, I don't know if anyone's watched the Sunderland Until I Die documentary, but there was a player there, Johnny Williams, he was a Welsh player. He went to see a counsellor and that was filmed during the documentary. So it is happening a lot more frequently now, where players are having troubles on and off the pitch and they're getting the support they need. But I mean, sometimes the best support, Chris, is family as well and stuff. So I'm not sure Richarlison, I would imagine a lot of his family's back in Brazil as well. So that's probably not been easy for him. But I think I agree with Melvin in terms of Richarlison this season has looked a different player. His last season, you could see he wasn't happy. He was carrying that injury. But I think as well, the way the team was playing, where he was playing, I think a lot of Spurs players last year weren't enjoying it. I think that's a total difference to this year. I think a lot of the players are enjoying it. There seems to be a lot more of a unity at the club, within the team and the club in general. And Ange has been a massive part of that. So personally, I would have, if Richarlison was fit tomorrow, 100%, I would have him on the team. But from what I hear, he won't be on the team. He'll make the bench at best. So if you can get him fit for Tuesday, Chris, he comes into the team. I think West Ham's going to be quite physical. So I think it's a game that will suit him. I think we could probably get away with not having him on Saturday, but I'll be disappointed if he's not available for Tuesday, because I think that's a game that will really suit him. You think about that Everton game, similar type of style of play, Everton and West Ham. I know West Ham have a lot more points, but they're quite direct, counter-attack. And that's the type of game Richarlison shone on this season against Everton. So I think he'd be perfect for the West Ham game. But all in all, Chris, it's just good that he's getting the help he needs. I think the fact he's speaking out about it now tells you that he's past the worst of it and he's back on the right track. I think just unfortunately he's had a few niggles recently and that's maybe affecting him. But I think this season has been a positive for him. And I think if he was fit for most of it, he'd have a lot more than 10 goals, because that run of form he was on was, he was as you say, the XG was 8.8. So he was actually scoring above his XG. If you think about some of the chances he was missing at the start of the season, if he had been in that kind of form, he would have a lot more goals. And I think he would have scored a lot more goals recently as well. And I even think when he came on against Fulham too, he gave us a bit of a threat, even though the game was over at 3-0. But again, things were happening around him. And he is very much a penalty box player. And if you have players like Johnson and Werner who like to get to the byline and cross it in, Richarlison's more suited to the striker role than Son probably. But I mean, Son's been excellent this season. And I agree with you, Chris. I think dropping Son would be Ange Postecoglou's biggest. I get what Melvin's saying, maybe do it if you're 2 or 3 up on Saturday and you want to bring Son off to rest him. But I think you have to start your captain. I think especially your top goal scorer, if you drop Son, it could cause a whole dressing room rift, because he is quite popular as well. So there's options there, Chris, and we're going to need the squad over the next 10 games, because as I say, there's rescheduled games to be put in there, Chelsea and Man City towards the end. So we're going to have quite a bunch finish. I think we're going to end up playing Liverpool, Burnley, Sheffield United, Man City and Chelsea all in May. So we're going to have 5 games, I think, in May. So that's going to be quite difficult to navigate, and especially some of the names there like Liverpool, Chelsea and Man City, some of the stronger teams. So it'll be interesting to see how Ange works it, because there is, as much as I'm enjoying it under Ange, Chris, there is that one part of me that says we do need to find a different way of playing sometimes, because we are quite predictable, God. But I think that is down to some of the personnel we have too. I think, you know, I spoke about Kulusevski earlier. He's always going to come on that left foot, isn't he? So, I mean, I'm not sure how much Ange can work with him on that. I think
that would be a whole different show, Gareth. Can Ange change the way, or will he change the way that we play? Give me a short answer.
I think he will learn. I think he will learn that in the Premier League, teams catch on much quicker than in Scotland, and there has to be games you adapt. and find our ways to win. So although we have won a lot of games this year, there's been games like Fulham, like Brighton, where the opposition, Wolves twice, have just sussed us out, and they knew exactly before a ball was kicked how to stop it, and we couldn't really react. So that is where we have to improve next season and for the final 10 games of this season.
Becky, let's come to you. Now, the match officials for the game on Saturday at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium against Luton, Jared Gillett will be the referee. His assistants will be Darren Cann and Neil Davis. Fourth official, James Linnington. VAR, Michael Salisbury, and assistant VAR, James Manwaring. I'd also like to just say that the halftime guest at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium is channel regular, Richard Whitehead, MBE. So do, if you are in the stadium, do listen to him. And also, Becky, turn your back on 65. Now, there's a new X page called Save Our Seniors. Of course, it is all to do with ticketing prices, asking that everyone turns their backs to the pitch on 65 minutes for 1 minute. They are on X and on Facebook, Save Our Senior 66. Becky, just very quickly, your thoughts on this and the ticket increase and, of course, Spurs taking away the senior prices.
Yeah, it's not ideal. I think, to be fair to the club, in terms of season ticket increases, there hasn't been one. I think we had a 1.5% increase, didn't we? And we knew when they raised the One Hotspur and One Hotspur membership match day tickets last year that it was only going to be inevitable that the season tickets would come this season. What I don't really agree with is the concessions for the seniors, really. And interestingly, this is the first game since they've announced that, I think, which is possibly why there's the action, is other clubs are doing the same thing. And I think Arsenal announced it maybe the day before, and I saw somebody saying about City today and West Ham. And when does it stop? You know, is it junior prices are going to go as well? And there'll be more parts of the stadium where you can't have concessions, because we already know that does happen in some parts of the stadium. And when does it kind of stop? And like I said at the top of the show, you know, your kind of loyalty is just stretched. And they are the people who would arguably supported Spurs the longest, and they're the ones that are being hit. And I just think, like, reading the comments while everyone's talking about, you know, and reading X now about different changes to fixtures, and like I said, it affects some people, it's fine for other people, it's not. It's just, it leaves a bit of a sour taste, I think, when you've got those people that, you know, they've supported a club when we were, you know, in a different stadium and times were different. And it's not great. In terms of the actual response to doing it, I think it could be something that could have an impact. It's not a televised game, so I think with it not being a 3 o'clock televised game, it's certainly in the UK how much impact that will have. But you know, as we saw with the banner that was shown at the Fulham game, somebody will take a photograph of it and somebody will share it, and that will give it some kind of leverage. But yeah, I think I'm, you know, behind the principle of it. I think I've said this before, it's a bit of a kind of an own goal where they could have really helped with some kind of morale, you know, in terms of ticket pricing, okay, but to do the two things at the same time, I just think it's a little bit ill thought out, really.
Do you think it will change, Becky, or not?
No, not really, because I know people that, certainly in terms of some people have returned their season tickets already, that it's affected. I doubt it. I think I've said before on the show, sometimes they leak rumours about certain things, about whether what the reaction to is. This was actually quite quiet and nobody really knew anything about it. Like I said, possibly the increase in the price for the season tickets, we probably would have anticipated, maybe not 6%. But it just seemed to kind of be a bit of a kind of sudden thing. And then to hear that other clubs are doing the same thing, that's when you kind of do feel like a bit of a customer, really.
Yeah, when all of the clubs in the Premier League always say that everyone should be included, and of course now pricing certain members of the fan base out, I think is totally wrong. Melvin, let's come to you. Reports in the last couple of days, 30-story hotel is now being agreed by Greater London Authority. Of course, this hotel will be ready for Euro 2028. Games will be played at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. It will have 180 rooms, 49 residential apartments, 64 car parking spaces. It will be on plot 3, which is on the junction of High Road and Park Lane. Of course, we all knew it was coming. What are your thoughts?
Are we going to get the daily updates with the construction again? You know, with the... Because that's how we met. We met outside the stadium when it was being built, and I remember speaking to. So we're gonna get that again, Chris.
Well, if I meet people outside a hotel, people will talk.
Yeah, I mean,
talk about the prices. I mean,
some fans find it, you know, like it's a negative thing that the club are gonna be building these things, and I just find it a laugh because I just think the more like revenue streams the club has, the more we benefit from these things at the end of the day. So but it's something not football related, because it's a hotel at the end of the day. So yeah, I'm sure it's there's some positives out of it, and I'm sure even the area will benefit out of it. I'm sure it'll create more jobs to the area, to the community, and that sort of thing. And so at the end of the day, it's all positive.
Yeah, and I think people will use it. I know of people that would definitely, you know, they would stay in it. The thing that I thought, if anyone saw me tweet about it, is that the view from the skywalk will be slightly strange. I loved the skywalk. It was fantastic. And being able to kind of, they have that kind of like inscribed sort of bit, don't they, where they say, this is there and that's there and the London Eye's here and da-da-da. It's kind of a very strange kind of, it feels like it's directly in the way, but I'm assuming that's been sorted out. But I saw someone else say that I doubt you'd be able to see the pitch from your room as well. But then I was thinking, like the cricket matches, a lot of the cricket pitches now have hotels with a view that you go in the balcony and then you can watch the cricket from there. So again, you're not going to be able to see the pitch, I would assume, all of it, but I'm sure all this has been thought through. But people will stay there. They just will. And it will make money. And I agree. I was watching the rugby last weekend because there was no football on. I watched it on. And I was watching it just because it was at Spurs. I did that with the NFL. It's like, oh, that's our home. It looks lovely. Why leave it empty for the, you know, the 25 times a season it's needed or whatever it is? You may as well use it. It's just we need to see that revenue on the pitch. That's what everyone will always say. It's not just to fill coffers. It's make sure that goes on the pitch. Because otherwise, you know, if it's not being used for football, use it for whatever you want. It doesn't matter. It's selling Spurs around the world. I was very proud. I always feel really proud when it's shown on TV. And I just think it's not a bad thing. People will go to the hotel. 100% people will use it.
I'll tell you what, Becky, in all the events that I've been to at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, which, you know, we moved in there nearly 5 years ago. That has gone quick, in my opinion. But the boxing. The atmosphere was absolutely electric. It was incredible. So, you know, as a venue, the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium is right up there. Gareth, let's come to you, because today it was announced by the Daily Mail that Tottenham have told a group of recruitment staff, including transfer guru Ian Broomfield, that they are no longer needed at the club as they have moved towards data-driven approach to signing players. Now, of course, being a coach yourself, I just wanted to ask you about the data side of things. Now, in a short Tottenham statement, they said the review of our football operations continues and involves the restructuring of a number of departments. Now, it does seem this season, week by week, month by month, certainly under Ange Postecoglou, major changes have been made at the football club for the better. In your opinion, is this for the better?
Time will tell, Chris. I mean, they're looking at, if you look at the clubs in the Premier League that have had success with this data model, Brighton are top of the tree. They are picking all their players based on data. So therefore, you know, the likes of Ian Broomfield, you know, the days of going and watching, you know, flying across to watch a game, just to watch a player play, now is gone. You may only go to watch that player after analysing all the data, almost for a final look. All the ingredients that you're looking for are on a spreadsheet or on videos, analysis, how a player moves. A lot of things is now being brought on. If you've seen with the Tonali news now, a lot of players before we sign are now looking at background checks. What are they doing previous to joining the club? Because if you look at Newcastle, they've had their hands burned with Tonali. Obviously, he paid a lot of money for him and now he's sidelined due to other stuff happening in his personal life. So, There's a lot being going under the transfer market and how players are being recruited. How much Ange Postecoglou has a say in this, I'm not so sure. I think this may well be driven by the club. They changed their whole model. Ange is just one part of it. Obviously, you take him on his word that he is the final say on a player, but he will be given all the data, all the videos, the analysis, all the recommendations from the recruitment team. And as I say, a lot of this has been done now during seasons. So the days of going to watch players all over the world has reduced, and there's probably not a need for as many scouts and stuff. A lot of it's down to recruitment. So, I mean, judging on our recent signings, Chris, you would say it's positive. I think a lot of the transfer market has been a success. You look at the likes of Udogi, Vicario, Van de Ven, all in this new regime coming in, have been massive hits, Saar and other ones. So, I mean, you would like to think this is going to set us up better for the future. There is a clear focus from the club on young players. That's the one thing that possibly worries me. Whilst I like young players coming in, as Becky said, ticket prices and stuff, all that there is background noise if the team's performing on the pitch. I'm not saying I agree with the increases, but if Spurs is winning trophies and if Spurs is having success on the pitch, a lot of that, well, people say, well, do you know what? For example, Man City increasing their ticket prices, they're winning trophies left, right and centre. So fans can't really argue, can they? Because they're getting the best in class, best in standard. And that's what my worry is. For all this revenue that we're generating, is it going to be reinvested into the team? Because ultimately, I love the stadium. I love that we got the box in, the F1. But ultimately, I'm a Spurs fan. It's not about having a shiny stadium. It's about winning matches. All the rest is great if you're winning. But as far as I'm concerned, it's about producing on the pitch. And that is the one thing I'm slightly concerned about, that we're moving away from, oh, it's just okay if we've got nice football, and are we going to be that club that's going to go the extra step and go out? There's a 25-year-old on the market, 70 million. Yeah. You walk straight into a team. Are we going to pay that money, or are we going to look at the next best thing for a slice of that 70 million? That's what I'm slightly worried about. So time will tell, Chris.
That was exactly my next question. Becky, let's come to you on this, because I had Fabrizio Romano on the channel last night. And it's funny because I've said this so often, the last world-class player, you know, world-class at the time of purchasing them, in my opinion, that Spurs signed was Jürgen Klinsmann back in 1994. Now, I asked Fabrizio Romano, this coming summer window, are we going to be signing up-and-coming players for the future, or are we going to be signing household names? His reply was solid players. Now, when you have the data guys now, is it all about planning for the future? Is it all about bringing in young stars for the future? Or do you think that Spurs will be going to spend money? Because you yourself, Becky, 5 minutes ago said it's about, you know, spending that revenue that is coming into the club on the pitch. Is that going to happen, in your opinion?
I think I've said this before on the show. I think the Ndombele thing has put them off for a long time, and even arguably Richarlison, you know, and maybe Johnson, they were high fees for players that some would argue haven't, certainly Ndombele, haven't really been as they should have been, and I think that is still in the back of their mind. I think even we think about the Harry Kane money that was sold, you know, arguably Vicario, Van de Ven, Udogi, Madison, you know, were they all bought with that money? So this idea that they are just going to go, yep, we'll have that for that amount of money, it's always made up of a collective amount, isn't it? And I do agree with the fact that I think the mentality of the player is also taken into consideration as well as the data. That's why often we hear a lot of them speaking this season, and the sort of things they say we really kind of resonate with, because their mentality and their attitude to being at Spurs is so good. And maybe we've not had that before. So, yeah, I don't think so. But reading, I saw about that, and people were saying today, oh, you know, is it going to be a household name? But then people like Eze are household names. And it depends on what you deem a household name. So sometimes they are completely unknown, and sometimes they're not. And I think it's just got to be, it seems to be a better approach now. I think it's great, again, to hear that hopefully if we are going to sign four players, we are going to do it early. You know, they announced this week, didn't they, maybe last week, about the Newcastle fixture, and we've had the Bayern Munich friendly being announced in August. But I just think, you know, want to get things done, get things sorted. Then they have that time with Ange. And I've said about Werner as well, I do think we should keep Werner. I think for the price that he is and the experience he's got in Europe. And also if he has the summer, you know, and the pre-season as well, I think that will help So, no, I'm not anticipating a kind of massively well-known, really expensive sort of player. I just think it needs to be the right player for the right fit. And I've said before on here as well that a lot of the players who seem to buy seem to be flexible in their positions that they can play. So I think they look at that as well. But yeah, there have been some, you know, I think if we have a household name, like I said, Eze, I'm just reading there about, you know, Maddison, obviously, you know, there will be some, but I don't think it's necessarily, and there's a lot of mention about Grealish. And I think possibly Grealish, A, we won't be able to afford his wages, and B, he might probably be a bit too old for Spurs now. So it's tricky, isn't it? Because I think if they follow that model, it's about the youth, the flexibility, but also it's about how much, you know, we never tend to buy them from the so-called bigger clubs because we don't match their wages. So I think that's where they tend to look at something of, you know, we seem to look in at Italy, don't we? And you were saying before about Raghu Jagasin, I think his agent, one of his other players has been linked with us this week as well. So they've got that kind of group of players, haven't they, that are in that agency as well. So I think that's where they're kind of going. But, you know, as I think giving youth is a chance is great, but I think also we've got some great players in the academy that we need to maybe see that step up. You know, the amount of players that played in the under-20s this week and possibly giving them a little bit more. You know, we've got Valise to come back. We've got Bergvall. You know, that there are those players that we've possibly forgotten about as well. Vukcevic, is that how you say his name? So we've got those players that we loaned back, didn't we? So and we've got Phillips, and, you know, so there is that side of it as well. But I think we need to kind of have a mix of a little bit more experienced. And, you know, but certainly it seems to be, there's an approach change, definitely.
Becky, that's a great point you make there, because the amount of injuries and the amount of issues that we've had on the pitch this season, are you surprised that Ange didn't use or utilise that youth system? Because, of course, when Ange was appointed, it was all about Ange Postecoglou uses the youth players, and he hasn't really.
No, and I think even, like, you know, when we needed a centre-back and Phillips went out on loan, and then, you know, Valise played, and I know he had that game where he got injured and Højbjerg tried to pass to him, didn't he? He was, like, lying on the ground. And then he went away, and now he's not playing for Seville as much. And I just think if they're going to be loaned out, they need to be playing. I know Phillips is playing. But, yeah, I just think there were areas, particularly when we had all those injuries, there were, it seemed, players that could at least be on the bench to cover those kind of players, and he didn't utilize them. And that's where we had Kulusevski playing in the middle, and we had, rather than sort of utilizing those players or pulling them back from loans and things like that. So yeah, it's tricky, isn't it? Because, you know, we're saying Poch sometimes did the same sort of thing, and it's tricky because Conte didn't particularly use the young players either.
Yeah. It's checkmate 734 says here, Ange basically said that the youth players aren't good enough, but the under-21s are sitting top of Premier League 2 and they've played some really exciting stuff this season. So I'm surprised by that. Viking of Spurs says here, what are your predictions for Tottenham Luton going to the new stadium for the first time? We'll have a fantastic time, and hopefully the Spurs can put on a show and get the 3 points. We'll do predictions in a second. Melvin, when I spoke to Fabrizio Romano last night, he said that the priorities for Spurs in the summer window will be a winger, a midfielder and a defender. He also expects Højbjerg and Ndombele and Brian Hill to leave. And he said that Heung-min Son's contract will not be a problem. Are you expecting Spurs to go big in the summer? And, you know, Fabrizio Romano said that he expects Spurs to get the business done early again, as they have done for Ange in both windows so far for him?
I don't think we'll go big. I don't think we have to go big either. I think, like Gareth said, with the data side of it, I think we have a plan, we have a structure, we have a way. We've been scouting and identifying talent and buying them. And it seems, I'd love to be part of the conversation when Ange speaks to the players, because he says something to them where they immediately, you know, fall in love with the idea of coming to Spurs, the identity of football, the way he wants them to play, the way, you know, he thinks they will fit into his system. I'd love to be, you know, I'd love to hear that conversation to see what he says, because
we need another Amazon.
Yeah, yeah, it'd be amazing. Honestly, I think we wasted it on Jose, and I'd love us.
You said Jose should have stayed.
You loved him at the time.
At the time, yeah, at the time, I Well, you have to say this is a different conversation. You have to see the players we had under Jose, but this is a different team. I think in the last 3 years the squad had a bit of an overhaul, and I think we've recruited really well. And under Fabio Paratici and Leng and the whole team, I think we've been recruiting really well. Yeah. And even the players we've been linked with from Serie A and the other leagues, I think, and even the players we've been linked with from the Premier League, if we get half of the players we've been linked with, I think we'll have another good window. And it's just adding more and more quality and players that fit into the system. So I'm not worried. I'm relaxed about the whole thing. I'm not, you know, wanting us to go and spend 70, 80 million on one player. I'm not, you know, I know it's exciting when you see and you see other clubs doing it. They spend 100 million on a player that's, you know, ready made and perfect, and you get jealous and you start to think, when will that be spares? When will we buy a 100 million pound player that's one of the best players in the Premier League? When will that be us? But at the same time, you look at signings that we've done, you know, for 15 million, like Vicario. I'm wearing the guy's shirt.
Yeah.
Brilliant signing. Udogi, you know, didn't cost much. And we have so many young players that we still don't know to what level these players are going to perform. You know, we still have Bergvall to come back. And you think, oh, what level is he going to be at? And there's some... Even the guys from the under-21s, you know, Donnelly and those guys, you think, are they ready to step up? Scarlett, is he ready to step up? There's some, hopefully one of these players, you know, has a breakthrough season, has a good preseason, you know, Ange plays them in a couple of games in the League Cup. Maybe, hopefully we're in the Champions League, but... Worst case scenario, let's say we don't qualify for the Champions League, we're in the Europa League. It's a good opportunity to play these kids or play Valise. And I remember under Pochettino when we had the Europa League and we used to play Mason, Townsend, Harry Kane, and it was vital for their development and probably was a really good season which kicked off their career. And they did good things for us, you know, and we outgrew Mason and Townsend eventually, but they were crucial in Pochettino in the early season. But yeah, I'm not worried with the recruitment. I'm quite relaxed. I think, you know, we're good with financial fair play, as we keep hearing. Spurs are in a comfortable position. And unlike last season, I think we'll actually sell a couple of players early. There's money for us to make, you know. I'm not going to talk about who. I think most Bears fans know which players are going out and we no longer need and we can upgrade. But yeah, I'm relaxed about the whole thing.
Well, we've certainly seen progress and we've certainly seen what Andrew's trying to do, which I think is a great sign right now. But it's got to continue. Every single transfer window has got to be productive, and it's got to move the club forward, which I'm sure Ange will demand that. Melvin, let's start with you. Ben writes a question here. Question for you all. If there's one player you could bring in now, who would it be?
That's a tricky one. I didn't really think about it much, but maybe, I don't know.
I suppose it's got to be a realistic signing.
Yeah. Maybe Rafinha, but I know that will cost a lot of money. But I think I really like Rafinha.
Yeah. Neto as well. I think them two are great players, although injury problems. Gareth, who for you?
In a perfect world, Neto, with his injury problems, would be perfect. But I think if you can't get Neto, you go for Elise. He would be my second choice. I think Elise, but again, injury problems. This is the thing with these players. They all are one. Again, this will be a really, really show of ambition. He's in and out of the team at Madrid, but Rodrigo, I think, will be another player I'd be looking at if Madrid are bringing in. They're looking to bring in somebody else, and he is not guaranteed to play every week. I'd be looking at that profile of player. But again, probably cost a lot of money. But I think Neto or Elise would cost 70 million at least, don't I? So it's just a shame with them too. I think they're the real two. But Rafinha seems more gettable because I think Barcelona have to sell. He may be available here for around 50 million. The one thing about him is his time at Barcelona hasn't been as successful as he would have hoped. So you're signing him on the back of maybe the Rafinha Leeds, who everybody was looking for, Man City, Chelsea, went to Barcelona, Arsenal were looking at him too. He probably hasn't had the heights that everyone hoped, but he could definitely come in and make an impact. I mean, I'm seeing a lot of people saying about Grealish, but I just don't think Grealish has value for money at the moment. Man City will be looking near that 70-80 million for him. Plus, he plays off the left. I think we're well stocked there. I think it needs to be a left-footed player on that right side. They come in. I think that's where we're really stuck because I think Son will play off the left if he's fit anyway. So I don't really see how an R player coming in like a Grealish. Where does he play? And this is the thing. So one of them two, Chris, in a perfect world, if our scouting team could suss out what's happening with Neto and Elise's injuries and sort it out, then any one of them two, I would be jumping up. I mean, and that's what Becky says about, you know, what is a household name. A signing like that, you know, maybe not world class, but they're still they've got proven Premier League experience. Another one, but it would be very difficult to get him, would be Kudos at West Ham. I think Kudos is very, very good.
We were linked with him for a long time as well.
Yeah, West Ham won't want to sell to us, and they only signed him last summer. So I think he signed him for 45 million. So they'll probably want near double that. So again, it will be a lot of money. But there's going to be a market, I think, with Liverpool. Salah's possibly moving on. So they're going to be looking for a similar type of player, a left footer on that right side. So there's going to be competition, Chris. And I'm here in Arsenal, we're looking for someone to come in and help Saka on that side. So I think that whereas last season it was the number six position, I think that left footer on the right side could be the inflated market this summer. Everybody's going to be looking for that kind of magical player in the final third that can win you a game.
Eze would certainly be another great signing. I know you mentioned him earlier, Becky. We were linked with him a long time ago. For £15 million, we could have had him, but it looks like he will probably be off to Manchester City. But interestingly, at the Spurs-Palace game a couple of weeks ago, his whole family had a box at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. I know you're shaking your head, Becky, but nodding.
I saw it. A lot of people, the kind of Korean fans, were like tweeting it. And they were having like little chat. And obviously, there was the Burberry shoot, wasn't there, where they ended up sitting next to each other.
Yeah.
But I think, listen to what you're just saying, and I think Forest need to sell players as well. So Gibbs White keeps getting mentioned a lot, doesn't he? So I think in typical Spurs style, we probably will pick up teams that are desperate to sell players. I think that's why Neto keeps getting mentioned. But, you know, I remember when we were linked with Ferguson for Brighton, you know, yeah. I think it'd be wonderful. I know you're saying about Grealish, I think it'd be fantastic, but I can see him going back to Villa.
The Ferguson one's interesting because obviously there's a lot of talk about him over in Ireland, Ferguson being the next big thing, but he struggled really since that. He had a bit of an injury, but he struggled there. He missed a penalty during the international break, and we're hearing that it's going to cost 120 million. I'm not sure any club's going to go near that. So I think for the time being, he signed a new contract, he stays at Brighton. But hopefully, from an Irish perspective, Ferguson goes from strength to strength.
Right, let's get score predictions. Becky, let's start with you. Tottenham Hotspur v Luton Town on Saturday. What's the score for you?
Well, as I said before, they score. They always concede. We always concede. I think it'll be, if on a good wind, it'll be like 4-1. But, you know, I'll take a kind of 3-1. But I do think we'll win quite convincingly.
I'm actually going to go for a professional 2-0 win. I know it sounds boring, but I think we're going to keep a clean sheet. And I think that Sonny will probably score both goals. But let's face it, 3 points would be 3 points. Back in the top four, even if it is for, you know, an hour or two, if Villa do beat Wolves. But you never know. Wolves have played some decent football, certainly against us this season. So hopefully they can do us a favour Saturday. But of course, we've got to do the job first. Melvin, score prediction?
3-1 Spurs.
Gareth?
I think what Becky said earlier was I think we're going to take them to the cleaners. I think we're going to wipe the floor with them. The fact they're missing so many players. I watched their game, and when Melvin was asked about Luton earlier, I've watched a lot of Luton this season. I think they've been fantastic for the Premier League. Mm-hmm. I watched their game against Bournemouth when they were 3-0 up, and they had a lot of it. They ended up losing players to injury. Second half, they were miles off it in terms of Premier League level. I think we're hitting them at the perfect time. It's going to be a very much a second-string Luton team. especially in defence. They're ravaged at the back with injuries. So I think there's an opportunity for us to go out and wipe the floor. So I'm going to go big, Chris. I'm going to say we're going to win 5-0.
5-0, wow. Oh, yes. I'd enjoy that one.
But then, I'm worried, then if we beat Luton 5-0, we go to West Ham, we don't win. So it needs to be followed up. This is the thing. It's great beating Luton 5. If we do beat Luton by 4 or 5 goals, we need to go and follow it up with West Ham. And then, of course, the Forest game on the Sunday then. So.
Well, this is the business end of the season. If you want Champions League, we've got to certainly put some shifts in and pick up some points from now until the end of the season. Becky, thanks so much for joining us again. It's been great having you on and your input. Where can people find you?
Hopefully in the South Stand, if you see me, say hello. I do get people come up to me going, you said I should say hello, so I've said hello, and I go, okay. But yeah, thanks for having me on. I'm on after West Ham, I think, on Tuesday, aren't I, next?
Yes.
Yeah, if you see me at the game, always give me a wave. But yeah, thanks for having me on again. Great to chat.
Thank you, Becky, and have a great Easter. Have a great weekend. And Melvin, great to have you back with us. It's been a long time. Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter, Melvin Malta, and I'm just give me a follow. I usually follow back, and excited to have Spurs again because the international break is quite boring, and I didn't go support Malta even though we drew twice, and I don't usually follow the international football, but yeah, they announced we're gonna have Malta. What's the cup called?
Yeah, it's the Malta Cup, I think. Visit Malta Cup. Malta Cup,
which I'm surprised I've not been emailed to present the trophy yet. I'm still
Melvin. We're an hour and a half in this podcast, and you're only mentioning this now.
I was waiting for you to bring it up, but I thought I mentioned it in the end. But yeah,
I was quite confused by it all. Why I thought when I seen visit it was on Malta, and then I read.
Yeah, me.
I was quite confused. I think we could all go out and meet Melvin in Malta for the game, but obviously it's at Spurs Stadium. So
yeah, I think
I think people have seen the tweet, and I'm on holiday. Thankfully, I think it'd be a very strange fixture to be at and to see Harry there. And yeah, I'm quite glad I don't have to make the decision to go.
Becky, you've mentioned it. What if you were in the stadium? What reaction would you give to Harry Kane and Eric Dier?
Oh, they would be cheered. I really don't think there would be anything else, and it's usually those fixtures are friendly and they're family games. I can still think to the Shakhtar game. I've said this on here that, you know, I was like, is he going to leave? No, he looks like he's going to stay. Do you think he's going to stay? No, he's going to leave. And it was just like that all afternoon. It would be a great reception. It's just that someone tweeted yesterday about, you know, the assists and goals that Son and Kane have scored, and to then be on opposing sides, and it's all, I don't know, I just think it would be a bit odd. But yeah, he would get a great reaction. Particularly even more so if they knock Arsenal out of the Champions League, it'd be a fantastic reaction. But I'm just glad I'm not there.
Yeah. And Gareth, thanks so much for joining us again. Great input from you as usual. And where can people find you?
You can find me at Gareth Hot Spurs on Twitter. Always positive, never moaning about anything. Chris might see a different, might have evidence to prove against that and messages, but usually very positive on Twitter, especially this season with the way we're playing. Also, you can find me on YouTube at 12th Man Podcast. I had an Arsenal fan on last night speaking about the Man City game, so it was great to share my Thursday night with you Spurs fans, because listening to these Arsenal fans at the moment, I'm hoping they get a humbling on Sunday by Man City and then Bayern Munich. And as regards to Kane, if I was at that stadium, I mean, that man would get the biggest cheer of the day from me. I mean, Spurs could beat Bayern Munich, and I would cheer Harry Kane going around the pitch at the end, clapping the fans even louder, because for me, what he did for this club, I'm not sure I'll ever see in my lifetime a player like him at the club, because of the connection he had being a Spurs man too. So you only wish Harry well, and I will be looking for a Bayern Munich top with Harry Kane in the back yet for the Arsenal 2 games. So I'm shameless. I'm supporting Harry Kane and Bayern Munich on those two Tuesday nights.
Yeah, me too.
Well, Becky, Melvin, Gareth, thanks so much for joining me for this match preview against Luton. Let's hope that Spurs can pick up the 3 points, go back into the top four. And of course, then we'll have 9 games left of the Premier League season. And let's hope that we will be hearing that Champions League music next season under Ange Postecoglou. And of course, it will be a great summer transfer window for the Australian boss as well. Have a great weekend, everyone. Happy Easter. And until the next time, come on, you Spurs.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximize your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
And there it is. That's as good as it gets on this stage. Nissan Townstar EV strikes again. It's an unstoppable van. Unstoppable!
Look, just fantastic. You can actually see the ProPilot technology in action. Effortless parallel parking.
It moves with all the confidence that comes with a 5-year warranty.
And with a bench full of all-star van experts, there's real strength in depth here.
That's all-star quality.
Search Nissan Townstar EV and visit your local all-star van centre to see for yourself.
Terms and conditions apply. 5 years or 100,000 miles, whichever comes first.
ProPilot is an advanced driver assist technology. Driver's responsibility to stay alert, drive safely, and control vehicle at all times.